I really think not only just your perspective as a person adding value, marketing per se, but I think you just bring in a different flavor. And me, I'm just like really honing in on community related things.
I think one thing to focus on would be the community, because that's what CSJ does. And he's got at the edge of the ground. The design industry especially is changing because of all the advancements in tools, technology, and the no-code movement. So it could be questioning, people don't need designers anymore because there's these no-code tools, or maybe it makes life easier for designers because they don't need to know so much in terms of web development. It could be discussing the pros and cons of the changing design industry. Welcome to the next Revolution in Motion. Welcome to the Life Files podcast. I'm Maylee.
And I'm Edmund. So Maylee, we have an awesome guest today, Christian San Jose, out from the Philippines. Christian, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Edmund and Maylee. Great to be here.
Christian, I could go ahead and try to introduce you, but like your sheet is just long, like long. So for the benefit of those listening, so that they don't listen to me just ramble on and on about how awesome you are, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Christian. I'm a designer. I've been designing for 14 years. Started as a graphic designer, transitioned into UX, been in the advertising space and the product space. But now what I'm mostly focused on is building solutions for the UX space itself. We started with a conference, and now we're teaching user experience for career shifters. So if you want to get into a UX career, that's what we want to help you achieve.
So what kind of projects do you have that help UX designers and users achieve this?
So we started with the conference. We gathered speakers from all over the world. We eventually had a bunch of attendees that are super interested. So it's mostly students or younger professionals that haven't got into the UX industry. And from those learnings, we figured out that there might be something here, given that most of our audience is younger professionals or even career shifters. So that led us to thinking more about education and figuring out the model that would work. And we eventually ended up with this 16-week bootcamp where it's part-time and the student actually doesn't have to pay upfront to get UX education. They only pay when they get hired. So that's what we built up. So it's called UX Plus University.
I'm curious, like, how did it come to be? Like, sure. I assume you were solving a problem that you yourself had experienced.
Yeah, definitely. This would be the story of many designers, not just mine. Most UX designers that you see out there are self-taught. And even if you went through formal education, you're probably teaching yourself as well a lot. You're watching YouTube videos, you're reading articles. And that was my experience. It was frustrating, but I do realize that there are opportunities for us to help. And the more I've talk to younger designers, the more I've mentored them or coached them, there's a struggle of building a portfolio, finding the right job, standing out in the application process. So all of those outside of the skills required, which is a lot of soft skills with the hard skills of designing, prototyping, testing, researching, also soft skills of like just great communication, being proactive, being outcome driven. Like I learned all of those, not through the articles I've read online, but I've learned all of those through actual experience. And if I can impart all of that to the younger people, we'll be helping them get further along than we did, making all those mistakes along the way.
Every word you say makes me think you're like a UX parent raising the next generation of UX designers.
So Christian, can you like walk us through your prior chapters before now?
Yeah. So I started in 2007 and I was, I think, 18 years old back then. Started as a graphic designer and freelance a lot and stumbled upon a call for a designer to help design the logo of Albert Pujols. So I had no idea who Albert Pujols was, but apparently he was like the Kobe Bryant of baseball back in the day. It was an open call, a competition, if you think about it. There's this stigma around speculative work in the general creative space. You shouldn't work for free, essentially. But me, as a 17, 18-year-old designer back then, I was like, I'm game. Like, I have nothing to lose. I know in the back of my head, if I don't do anything, I'm not going to stand out. So just took it on, did the logo. They eventually picked me, had some revisions, improved on it. The client loved it. So that was awesome. From that point, they saw I had a bunch of websites that I did for athletes back in the day. So this was me in 13, 14 years old. I wasn't getting paid, but there was an opportunity to create websites for Carlos Arroyo. He was a Detroit Piston, Puerto Rican NBA superstar. And Eric Snow, Cleveland Cavaliers, Sixth Man of LeBron James. So those websites were free when I was like 14. I'm 32, so that's a long
time. It sounds like they got their money's worth.
Yeah, for sure. But that was at the time where websites were Photoshop and they had to use Dreamweaver or FrontPage. But again, fast forward to 2007, they saw that I did a bunch of things when I was younger. And then, hey, you do websites as well. Can you do a website for Albert Pujols? I said, yes, I do that all the time. Like, I had no idea how to do websites, basically. But I said, yes. And I tried to learn, like, basically overnight how to do WordPress websites, how to code. Like, I knew front end somehow, like HTML, CSS. But for me to execute like a full website, I had to know how to code. So WordPress, that was my first WordPress website, the official website of Albert Pujols. And then from there, they loved it, wrapped up the project. And then their next email to me, want to do work for Kobe Bryant. Oh, like, as in, they just actually mentioned Kobe. Oh, like, you mean Kobe Bryant, right? Yeah, like, game. I'll do it, hiding all my excitement. Yeah, wow. We were able to do his official website, his official logo, his foundation logo, Shopify store. That's basically how I grew my portfolio. And I quit my day job. I was a UI designer in an internet marketing company. It's carparts.com. So that was my day job. I dropped out of college to get that day job. And then I was having this good freelance gig that, okay, like I can quit now. I don't need my full-time job. So did that full-time, basically freelancing for this agency. I started a sole proprietorship. Basically, that set me up because they were paying me good rates that in the Philippines, as you guys know, in Malaysia, it multiplies. Like, yeah. If someone pays you in USD, that's amazing. So I was able to actually build a company, hire like one person, the developer, full-time. And yeah, like I was 21 years old.
Wow. Because you answered a competition.
Yeah.
Yes, for free.
Exactly.
For free.
It's, yeah. Initially, if you don't win, you're essentially working for free. If you win, you get paid. So
yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you did get paid. Okay. So then going from being a freelancer, getting hired, quitting your full-time job, and actually like now hiring people. Walk me through how it went from that to conferences.
Yeah, for sure. So we actually have two conferences. We have Graphica Manila. So Graphica has been running for 16 years. It's a good conference. We've had a bunch of legends in the creativity scene, not just graphic design, but also animation, yeah, visual design, comic book, illustrators, from directors to anything you think of that's creative. So we had Stefan Sagmeister, Chris Doe, Austin Kleon, Jessica Hish, a bunch of people, like people from Pixar, Tokidoki, Walt Disney, Industrial Lights and Magic, like all of these amazing guys. We started 16 or 17 years ago in 2006, started actually by my friend. And that friend approached me in 2019. So I designed the logo for that, helped them out very early on. That friend approached me in 2019 to start a UX conference, which is how UX Plus started. So UX Plus is the UX version of that conference, which is the largest gathering of UX professionals in this side of the world, in Asia. So the same amount of production, at least the live in-person events we've had for Graphica Manila, was the same power behind all of those, same standard of speakers, like pop speakers, in terms of designing the program experience, all of those. We put the same effort. And in 2020, we created an online version of that because of the pandemic. We were able to increase the attendees from 1,300 in person in 2019 to 3,600 in 2020, which was amazing. Yeah, like Lottie was actually a sponsor of that. So thank you for partnering up with us. Yeah.
I guess what I'm curious about is, as a designer, what is everyone using? Because you have loads of different types of designers nowadays, the ones that are self-taught, like you mentioned, and also the ones who mm-hmm. maybe can't afford things like After Effects or Photoshop. And especially mm-hmm. when we talk about the no-code movement and stuff, how has anything like that either helped or hindered designers?
For sure. So in terms of tools, like when I was younger, and there's no shame in saying I pirated Photoshop, like everybody did it when they were in their teenage years. But as I was earning, like definitely Photoshop was a good tool to learn, and Illustrator. I've only recently played around with After Effects. And actually, the reason why I played around After Effects was I was getting into Webflow, and they had this tutorial on how to have all of these Apple-like animations in the website. And I had to brush up on my actual After Effects skills, because I had a whole different goal of, okay, like I wanted that. I wanted that animation. Lottie is great. So we've used that from the smallest pieces in our website, whether it's like an animating hamburger button that turns into an X when you click it, all the way to like our hero image that we get flack on because it's 2 MB, guys. It's not too big of a file. But if you go to uxpl.us, like our website, it's like a big Lottie animation in the background. So yeah, the no code tools out there enable so much more creativity. I've been always stuck with either Photoshop, AI, or Figma, like all of these static tools. And I was jealous of everyone in Dribbble, maybe even 5 years ago or 3 years ago. Like they were animating their UX and UI mockups. I know that's more actually more visual. It's not really user experience, but the visual experience is very important as well. So I was super jealous of everyone in Dribbble basically animating everything. And like, I'll never learn that. I don't want to learn a new tool like After Effects. Like that's too hard. And then Webflow's around, and there's this new no code movement which basically made everything accessible.
Yeah, I bet there's so many designers like just staring at Dribbble thinking like, oh, I have the ideas in my head, but how do I make them? And I imagine a lot of that turmoil going on around in people's heads. What would you say to someone like that who's just looking at it like, oh my gosh, After Effects is this beast, and like how do I even get from point A to point B with it? And how do I produce something at the end, like nice even?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say just keep exploring. Even when I'm not trying to learn, like I surround myself with all of these inspiration, whether it's like on YouTube, when someone's walking through like the top 11 tools in Webflow or something like that, like integrations in Webflow, like I'm not there to like, oh, I'm going to learn. It's more of like, I just love consuming. And if I learn something new, oh, I'm going to use that in this next project. So I'm in that constant state of just absorbing information or like just trying to find inspiration. And I don't know if that was conscious when I started, but it's definitely more in the back of my head now. Like when I see a new website, like I love going to Product Hunt. And it's a new product, it's a new app out there. I'm not just checking out like the value proposition or what they try to solve. Because typically, if you want to stand out in those websites, you're probably going to have good designs or something, like something good. So when I check those out, like it's in always in the back of my mind. It's somehow subconsciously checking new designs, checking new styles or ways or even tools that they've used, and then learning from there, not being shy about researching on my own or asking around in different communities. What's the best version of this thing that I just found? So basically that, just have an open eye and share and ask around.
So Christian, with the fact that you've now been able to combine your love for design and your ability to really delve deep in UX, and then combine that with this goal you had in animation, and then now combine that with no code, which is like with Webflow and visual development, that was your vehicle to express yourself using like animation. Do you think there's an argument to be made? Are these trends, visual development, animation, all these coming together, are they helping or hurting designers? What's your take?
Right. For my take, I haven't zoomed out and looked at the industry or like the bigger creator space. At least what I can say from experience, it's definitely helped me out. Like it's unlocked in me the capability of, I can start an MVP, or I can go further than where I've been before. I'm sure you guys have a list of great ideas that you never get around to.
Yes.
Like I've had so many of those. I have multiples of like idea lists. But yeah, like all of those float away because it's essentially, I need a developer for this, or I need another person to help out in this one. And then when I stumble upon all these new tools like Webflow, Lottie Files, Member Stack, JetBoost, basically unlocked a new side of me. And I realized, I can do all of this on my own. Just have to watch a couple of YouTube videos. And it personally helped me. So I'd say from what I've observed in our smaller communities, Edmund and I are part of OnDeck, the No-Code Fellowship. We saw so many amazing products being built in just 10 weeks. From safety and privacy for women dating, all the way to COVID information apps. There's not much traditional developers there. They come from their own different industries and they bring their own insights and talents, and they just use a new medium to essentially elevate what they've already been doing for the longest time.
That's a really nice quotable, a new medium to elevate what they've already been doing. I will agree with you. These fellowships around like visual development, no code, it really just unlocked something in me that kind of was always there, but then it enhanced it. And I guess in that same vein, we're noticing a similar trend with animation, and we're lucky to be in this space with Lottie Files. But in spite of all that, Christian, what would you say are some persistent pain points for UX experts, designers, and just people that you collaborate with and come across? What are still some pain points that may not have gone away?
Yeah, for sure. But when it comes to animation specifically, it might be that presenting to stakeholders or clients a static design, like that carries the value or the design up to a certain point. But really like an interactive prototype or something as close to reality as possible, which means the highest fidelity it could be, makes it more believable to either a user that's testing during a usability test or a stakeholder that's giving feedback. So that high fidelity stage, there's a lot of things that could still be improved, because a lot in UX tend to focus on the low fidelity. When I say fidelity, it's believability. So when you create something that's low in fidelity, it's not really believable as an actual website. It's a wireframe, it's a sitemap, it's pieces of cards or notes or sketches on a piece of paper. When you're doing all of those are super important. And there's a lot of focus in the industry towards the low fidelity stages of diverging, converging to solve a problem. It's been great to see all the progress in that stage. Essentially, like we have to take it all the way through. We have to create useful, functional websites that also could cause delight or could change the life of whoever is using it in a small way or in a big way. So there's things we could do in terms of upskilling in the high fidelity stages. Also, like proving the value of UX. That's a big problem that everyone faces, regardless of your country, industry. Trying to prove the value of what we do to clients, stakeholders, that's definitely one. Finding communities that support you. And then also finding time. So of course, there are communities. People are there and are very open to help. But I'd say, given that there's no mechanism to really promote it, unless like a great community leader could really have recurring events or recurring check-ins with people or mastermind groups, it's really like everyone is just sitting there in a Slack group waiting for something to happen, for the next conference to happen, and they'll come alive again. So it can't be just that. So finding opportunities to connect to people more organically beyond the actual practice itself. Yeah, lots of problems all the way through. Of course, there's so many deep problems and issues and opportunities we could take head on in the UX space. But yeah, like on the surface, even the low-hanging fruit, there's still a lot of work to do there.
Can you help me clarify? Is it UX Plus is the event and then UX University is the course you spoke about, right?
Yes. So UX Plus Conference, that's an annual event. And then the UX Plus University is the school where we teach students. Yeah.
And so what would you say are the things you've learned that has worked and then not worked? How has that journey been in sort of refining these two things?
Definitely in when we started a conference, we just wanted a cool conference. So as with any new endeavor, it's not very thought out or well strategized and structured. So for the first year, that was an in-person event. Not much purpose in 2019. We just wanted a great event, great representation, a well-balanced list of speakers from Asia and also Southeast Asia and the larger UX space in the US or Europe. So we had someone from Twitter in the UK, someone from Google in the US, someone from Grab in Singapore. Actually, like the Grab guy and then the Google guy were actually Filipinos too. They didn't grow up here, but we wanted that representation so that people watching were seeing people that they could aspire to be. At first, we were aiming for 400 people. We'd be happy if 400 people showed up. We passed 400 people in 2 days. So we were like, oh, that's awesome. I guess we have to book the adjacent room in conference hall. So from there, like 2020 was more deliberate. We wanted Asian UX professionals from everywhere, basically. We still had things to improve. We didn't have much speakers from big Asian companies. So we didn't have the Tokopedias and then the Mukhalapak and then outside of Grab, but no Agoda, no big Asian conglomerates. But we had a bunch of friends we knew. We always wanted to have UX Plus conference be the stage for discussions and have it be accessible. Not really like just an Asian conference, but 50% of our market came from Asia. We wanted to for people to see people that represent them in the highest levels. So that was a more deliberate goal for us. And now in this coming year, we're trying to do that even further. So last year we had Julie Zhu, Dan Mall. So Julie Zhu was the VP of design of Facebook up until 2019, author of a great management book. And then we had Dan Mall, who's a very well-known designer that not a lot of people know that he's half Pakistani, half Filipino. But he's like this design superstar who I've been following for since 2009 or something. We had John Saratsky, the author of the Design Sprint book, leaders, like the head of design and research in Thumbtack. But yeah, for next year, of course, like we've had our way, like curating a conference in the past 2 years towards artists or like towards our network. So whoever catches this recording, this is the first time you'll hear it. We're planning for it to be a 2-weekend event. So it's going to be 4 days. The first weekend is UX Plus Conference Asia. And then the second weekend is UX Plus Conference Global. So UX Plus Conference Asia focuses on Asians in Asia, basically. That's a criteria. for a speaker. So who are the great leaders in the space over here? And then the next weekend are, whether you're from Asia, whether you're from elsewhere around the world, we're just looking for the voices that might not have the same stage as everyone else, those that have something great to talk about.
I love the intention and the ambition behind what you just laid out. Thank you for sharing it with us here first on the Lottie Files podcast. Yeah, for sure. There is one thing I want to ask you. So I know we're talking about UX Plus Asia and then UX Plus Global, those conferences. But there is something else that you're working on that I think is very special and we need to just address, which is the UX Plus University itself. Can you just lay it out for folks listening? Lay out the problem and the solution and what needs to happen for UX Plus University to succeed?
Yeah, definitely. So when we were looking at creating a solution like for learning UX, initially, I wanted to do pre-recorded courses, have it be accessible, probably like $100 or lesser or more. I had no idea. I just wanted to pre-record things, but it have something to sell. And yeah, that was it. But as I tried to look into the problem space even more, like the salaries, the opportunities of hiring or opportunities to get to a company that pays them well, I tried to connect the dots. Essentially, like everything made sense to me that, oh, this is why there's not much great resources out there because it might be aligned more towards a different market. So when you talk about user experience designers, if you Google right now, what's the salary of a UX designer, you probably get somewhere from 40,000 USD to 50,000 USD. And like when you're someone from, say, a third world country, someone from Vietnam or the Philippines or elsewhere, like you see that and you'd say that, oh, like I'm a graphic designer. That seems like a high salary. I on this job, what do I do? Where could I learn? But in reality, like those are, of course, average salary levels, maybe in the Western world or maybe in more developed countries. In the Philippines, the starting salary of a junior UX designer is 7,000 USD. And that's the same, basically, or almost the same across Southeast Asia. If you include Singapore, it jumps all the way up to 12,000 USD per year. So given that, those are good incomes. You can have a good standard of living with just 1,000 USD per month in our countries and this side of the world. So that's not to say like you're not getting paid well, but it says more that there's a great misalignment between what's being said and what's the reality in these individual countries. Knowing that the salary is 7,000 or even 12,000 if you're in Singapore or all the way to 15,000, the learning opportunities out there aren't really as accessible in our side of the world too. So if you opt for a UX bootcamp, it might end up that you'll pay anywhere from 6,000 USD to 15,000 USD. And you might have to quit your day job if you want to finish it in 6 months because it's a full-time program. If you want to do it part-time, you'd have to do it for 10 months or 12 months. So basically, you're investing your time, you're investing a lot of money because it costs all the way up to 15,000 USD. You're going to have to save up 15,000 USD and you can pay it upfront. It's basically 1 year's worth of the high-end salary, even before you get the job. If you're in a country that pays around 7,000, that's equivalent to 2 years worth of a salary. So after you go through that program, you'll probably be paying off that program for 1 year to 2 years. Of course, master's degree programs are even more expensive. But then there's the other side of the equation. There's the Skillshare, Coursera, the massive open online courses as well. These are great. Like these have helped me in terms of just learning at my own pace. But with those platforms, there's a much lower completion rate. Like it's reported that the completion rate in those platforms are only 6-7%. Of people actually finish courses.
So knowing that, how did you adjust UX Plus University to tackle that problem?
So we had to find the middle ground. So there's the synchronous learning, which is good. You can learn at your own pace. But there's also that other side where from our user research, just talking to people, like what they love from these UX boot camps, like General Assembly, is the community. The people that they can talk to when they graduate, they still feel a connection to. And also community is there forever. So from there, we figured that the model that could work would be the income share model, which is students pay nothing upfront. They get into the program and they essentially pay only when they get hired. So it was made famous by Lambda School in the US for their coding boot camps. So that's what we figured that could work. And then we priced it at something that's more affordable. It's $1,970 USD if you pay upfront. It's around 2,200 if you pay in 3-month installments. So 740 times three. So that's a 3-month installment. And then the income share agreement, that's 16% of your monthly income for 2 years, only after you get hired and only after a minimum salary. So if you don't hit that minimum, we don't charge you. And you can only pay up to a ceiling as well. So you don't overpay us. If you strike out, like you get paid a lot of money, you don't have to literally pay 16% of that amount of money. You can pay for just 15 months or something if it's equivalent to the salary ceiling. So lots of details, lots of learnings. I had to figure out like how to talk to investors, these things that come with being in a startup, like trying to push for new value to be created. It's difficult, but it's definitely worth it. I love waking up doing it.
What else needs to happen to make UX Plus University a success?
So a critical part of this whole equation are the hiring partners. So the more hiring partners that we have, the people that essentially would take the same bet in the students as we have taken in the students. So we're essentially taking bets that these people that went through our application process are going to be the next good UX designers out there. Through our program, we're going to help them learn even more. So when we have a partner that's looking through their resumes first before asking around if what they're looking for is essentially a junior designer, that's already a great help for our students, not just for us, but for our students, that essentially they have a stronger shot of taking a job because that's their goal. That's why they went through this program. It's a program for career shifters, essentially, or those that want to accelerate their career. So having great hiring partners, that's awesome. Our hiring partners don't just get early access to our students' portfolios and resumes, but they can give projects to students so they can test them out during the program. The projects that they give out is actually part of the curriculum. We're not doing hypothetical projects. We're doing actual real client projects. So that's how we build portfolios for our students.
So Christian, for all the people listening today, where can they reach out to you? So if they want to ask you a question about UX Plus or UX Plus University, or even just some sort of general design career advice, where can they find you? What's the best place?
So CSJ89 on Twitter. That's where you can reach out to me personally. You can DM me. In terms of the UX Plus University and UX Plus Conference, it's on Facebook. So if you search UX, the plus symbol, you'll find our event. So either UX Plus or UX Plus Conference, that's where we announce our next event. And then for UX Plus University, it's uxpl.us. So that's our URL.
Thank you. Awesome. Hopefully everyone will check that out and we'll see them all at the next conference.
For sure. Yeah.
Christian, want to thank you for coming through. Really appreciate having you. And we'd love to talk to you again very soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, Edmund and Meili. Love being here. Good chat. Definitely.